This is Audible.
Listening Library presents The Heroes of Olympus, Book 5, The Blood of Olympus, by Rick Riordan. Read for you by Nick Chamion. To my wonderful readers, sorry about that apology for the last cliffhanger. I'll try to avoid cliffhangers in this book. Well, except for maybe a few small ones. Because I love you guys. 7 half-bloods shall answer the call. To storm or fire the world must fall. An oath to keep with a final breath. And foes bear arms to the doors of death. Chapter 1. Jason. Jason hated being old. His joints hurt. His legs shook. As he tried to climb the hill, his lungs rattled like a box of rocks. He couldn't see his face, thank goodness, but his fingers were gnarled and bony. Bulging blue veins webbed the backs of his hands. He even had that old man's smell. Mothballs and chicken soup. How was that possible? He'd gone from 16 to 75 in a matter of seconds, but the old man smell happened instantly, like, boom! Congratulations! You stink! Almost there, Piper smiled at him. You're doing great. Easy for her to say. Piper and Annabeth were disguised as lovely Greek serving maidens. Even in their white sleeveless gowns and laced sandals, they had no trouble navigating the rocky path. Piper's mahogany hair was pinned up in a braided spiral. Silver bracelets adorned her arms. She resembled an ancient statue of her mom, Aphrodite, which Jason found a little intimidating. Dating a beautiful girl was nerve-wracking enough. Dating a girl whose mom was the goddess of love? Well, Jason was always afraid he'd do something unromantic, and Piper's mom would frown down from Mount Olympus and change him into a feral hog. Jason glanced uphill. The summit was still 100 yards above. Worst idea ever. He leaned against a cedar tree and wiped his forehead. Hazel's magic is too good. If I have to fight, I'll be useless.
It won't come to that, Annabeth promised.
She looked uncomfortable in her serving maiden outfit. She kept hunching her shoulders to keep the dress from slipping. Her pinned-up blonde bun had come undone in the back, and her hair dangled like long spider legs. Knowing her hatred of spiders, Jason decided not to mention that.
We infiltrate the palace, she said. We get the information we need, and we get out.
Piper set down her amphora, the tall ceramic wine jar in which her sword was hidden.
We can rest for a second. Catch your breath, Jason.
From her waist cord hung her cornucopia, the magic horn of plenty. Tucked somewhere in the folds of her dress was her knife, Catoptris. Piper didn't look dangerous, but if the need arose, she could dual-wield celestial bronze blades or shoot her enemies in the face with ripe mangoes. Annabeth slung her own amphora off her shoulder. She, too, had a concealed sword, but even without a visible weapon, she looked deadly. Her stormy gray eyes scanned the surroundings, alert for any threat. If any dude asked Annabeth for a drink, Jason figured she was more likely to kick the guy in the bifurcum. He tried to steady his breathing. Below them, a Thales Bay glittered, the water so blue it might have been dyed with food coloring. A few hundred yards offshore, the Argo II rested at anchor. Its white sails looked no bigger than postage stamps, its 90 oars like toothpicks. Jason imagined his friends on deck following his progress, taking turns with Leo's spyglass, trying not to laugh as they watched Grandpa Jason hobble uphill.
Stupid Ithaca, he muttered.
He supposed the island was pretty enough. A spine of forested hills twisted down its center. Chalky white slopes plunged into the sea. Inlets formed rocky beaches and harbors where red-roofed houses and white-stuccoed churches nestled against the shoreline. The hills were dotted with poppies, crocuses, and wild cherry trees. The breeze smelled of blooming myrtle. All very nice, except the temperature was about 105 degrees. The air was as steamy as a Roman bathhouse. It would have been easy for Jason to control the winds and fly to the top of the hill, but no. For the sake of stealth, he had to struggle along as an old dude with bad knees and chicken soup stink. He thought about his last climb 2 weeks ago, when Hazel and he faced the bandit Skyron on the cliffs of Croatia. At least then, Jason had been at full strength. What they were about to face would be much worse than a bandit.
"You sure this is the right hill?" he asked. "Seems kind of, I don't know, quiet."
Piper studied the ridgeline. Braided in her hair was a bright blue harpy feather, a souvenir from last night's attack. The feather didn't exactly go with her disguise, but Piper had earned it, defeating an entire flock of demon chicken ladies by herself while she was on duty. She downplayed the accomplishment, but Jason could tell she felt good about it. The feather was a reminder that she wasn't the same girl she'd been last winter, when they'd first arrived at Camp Half-Blood. "The ruins are up there," she promised. "I saw them in Catoptris's blade. And you heard what Hazel said.
The biggest gathering of evil spirits I've ever sensed," Jason recalled. "Yeah, sounds awesome."
After battling through the underground temple of Hades, the last thing Jason wanted was to deal with more evil spirits. But the fate of the quest was at stake. The crew of the Argo II had a big decision to make. If they chose wrong, they would fail, and the entire world would be destroyed. Piper's blade, Hazel's magical senses, and Annabeth's instincts all agreed. The answer lay here in Ithaca, at the ancient palace of Odysseus, where a horde of evil spirits had gathered to await Gia's orders. The plan was to sneak among them, learn what was going on, and decide the best course of action, then get out, preferably alive. Annabeth readjusted her golden belt.
"I hope our disguises hold up. The suitors were nasty customers when they were alive. If they find out we're demigods..."
"Hazel's magic will work," Piper said.
Jason tried to believe that. The suitors. 100 of the greediest, evilest cutthroats who'd ever lived. When Odysseus, the Greek king of Ithaca, went missing after the Trojan War, this mob of B-list princes had invaded his palace and refused to leave, each one hoping to marry Queen Penelope and take over the kingdom. Odysseus managed to return in secret and slaughter them all. Your basic happy homecoming. But if Piper's visions were right, the suitors were now back, haunting the place where they died. Jason couldn't believe he was about to visit the actual palace of Odysseus, one of the most famous Greek heroes of all time. Then again, this whole quest had been one mind-blowing event after another. Annabeth herself had just come back from the eternal abyss of Tartarus. Given that, Jason decided maybe he shouldn't complain about being an old man.
"Well,"
he steadied himself with his walking stick,
"if I look as old as I feel, my disguise must be perfect. Let's get going."
As they climbed, sweat trickled down his neck. His calves ached. Despite the heat, he began to shiver. And try as he might, he couldn't stop thinking about his recent dreams. Ever since the House of Hades, they'd gotten more vivid. Sometimes Jason stood in the underground temple of Epirus, the giant Clytius looming over him, speaking in a chorus of disembodied voices.
"It took all of you together to defeat me. What will you do when the Earth Mother opens her eyes?
Other times, Jason found himself at the crest of Half-Blood Hill. Gia, the Earth Mother, rose from the soil, a swirling figure of dirt, leaves, and stones.
Poor child.
Her voice resonated across the landscape, shaking the bedrock under Jason's feet.
Your father is first among the gods, yet you are always second best to your Roman comrades, to your Greek friends, even to your family. How will you prove yourself?
His worst dream started in the courtyard of the Sonoma Wolf House. Before him stood the goddess Juno, glowing with the radiance of molten silver.
Your life belongs to me, her voice thundered. An appeasement from Zeus.
Jason knew he shouldn't look, but he couldn't close his eyes as Juno went supernova, revealing her true godly form. Pain seared Jason's mind. His body burned away in layers like an onion. Then the scene changed. Jason was still at the wolf house, but now he was a little boy, no more than 2 years old. A woman knelt before him, her lemony scent so familiar. Her features were watery and indistinct, but he knew her voice. Bright and brittle, like the thinnest layer of ice over a fast stream.
I will be back for you, dearest, she said. I will see you soon.
Every time Jason woke up from that nightmare, his face was beaded with sweat, his eyes stung with tears. Nico D'Angelo had warned them. The House of Hades would stir their worst memories, make them see things and hear things from the past. Their ghosts would become restless. Jason had hoped that particular ghost would stay away, but every night the dream got worse. Now he was climbing to the ruins of a palace where an army of ghosts had gathered.
That doesn't mean she'll be there,
Jason told himself. But his hands wouldn't stop trembling. Every step seemed harder than the last.
Almost there, Annabeth said. Let's...
Boom! The hillside rumbled. Somewhere over the ridge, a crowd roared in approval, like spectators in a coliseum. The sound made Jason's skin crawl. Not so long ago, he'd fought for his life in the Roman Colosseum before a cheering, ghostly audience. He wasn't anxious to repeat the experience.
What was that explosion?
He wondered.
Don't know, Piper said.
But it sounds like they're having fun. Let's go make some dead friends.
Chapter 2. Jason. Naturally, the situation was worse than Jason expected. It wouldn't have been any fun otherwise. Peering through the olive bushes at the top of the rise, he saw what looked like an out-of-control zombie frat party. The ruins themselves weren't that impressive. A few stone walls, a weed-choked central courtyard, a dead-end stairwell chiseled into the rock. Some plywood sheets covered a pit, and a metal scaffold supported a cracked archway. But superimposed over the ruins was another layer of reality. A spectral mirage of the palace as it must have appeared in its heyday. Whitewashed stucco walls lined with balconies rose 3 stories high. Column porticos faced the central atrium, which had a huge fountain and bronze braziers. At a dozen banquet tables, ghouls laughed and ate and pushed one another around. Jason had expected about 100 spirits, but twice that many were milling about, chasing spectral serving girls, smashing plates and cups, and basically making a nuisance of themselves. Most looked like Larrys from Camp Jupiter, transparent purple wraiths in tunics and sandals. A few revelers had decayed bodies with gray flesh, matted clumps of hair, and nasty wounds. Others seem to be regular living mortals, some in togas, some in modern business suits or army fatigues. Jason even spotted one guy in a purple Camp Jupiter t-shirt and Roman legionnaire armor. In the center of the atrium, a gray-skinned ghoul in a tattered Greek tunic paraded through the crowd, holding a marble bust over his head like a sports trophy. The other ghosts cheered and slapped him on the back. As the ghoul got closer, Jason noticed that he had an arrow in his throat, the feathered shaft sprouting from his Adam's apple. Even more disturbing, the bust he was holding, was that Zeus? It was hard to be sure. Most Greek god statues looked similar, but the bearded, glowering face reminded Jason very much of the giant hippie Zeus in Cabin 1 at Camp Half-Blood.
"Our next offering!"
the ghoul shouted, his voice buzzing from the arrow in his throat.
"Let us feed the Earth Mother!"
The partiers yelled and pounded their cups. The ghoul made his way to the central fountain. The crowd parted, and Jason realized the fountain wasn't filled with water. From the 3-foot-tall pedestal, a geyser of sand spewed upward, arcing into an umbrella-shaped curtain of white particles before spilling into the circular basin. The ghoul heaved the marble bust into the fountain. As soon as Zeus's head passed through the shower of sand, the marble disintegrated like it was going through a wood chipper. The sand glittered gold, the color of ichor, godly blood. Then the entire mountain rumbled with a muffled boom, as if belching after a meal. The dead partygoers roared with approval.
"Any more statues?" the ghoul shouted to the crowd. "No? Then I guess we'll have to wait for some real gods to sacrifice."
His comrades laughed and applauded as the ghoul plopped himself down at the nearest feast table. Jason clenched his walking stick.
"That guy just disintegrated my dad. Who does he think he is?"
"I'm guessing that's Antinous," said Annabeth, "one of the suitors' leaders. If I remember right, it was Odysseus who shot him through the neck with that arrow."
Piper winced.
"You think that would keep a guy down? What about all the others? Why are there so many?" "I don't know," Annabeth said. "Newer recruits for Gia, I guess? Some must have come back to life before we closed the doors of death. Some are just spirits."
"Some are ghouls," Jason said. "The ones with the gaping wounds and the gray skin, like Antinous. I've fought their kind before."
Piper tugged at her blue harpy feather.
"Can they be killed?"
Jason remembered a quest he'd taken for Camp Jupiter years ago in San Bernardino.
"Not easily. They're strong and fast and intelligent. Also, they eat human flesh."
"Fantastic," Annabeth muttered. "I don't see any option except to stick to the plan. Split up, infiltrate, find out why they're here. If things go bad..."
"We use the backup plan," Piper said.
Jason hated the backup plan. Before they left the ship, Leo had given each of them an emergency flare the size of a birthday candle. Supposedly, if they tossed one in the air, it would shoot upward in a streak of white phosphorus, alerting the Argo II that the team was in trouble. At that point, Jason and the girls would have a few seconds to take cover before the ship's catapults fired on their position, engulfing the palace in Greek fire and bursts of celestial bronze shrapnel. Not the safest plan, but at least Jason had the satisfaction of knowing that he could call an airstrike on this noisy mob of dead guys if the situation got dicey. Of course, that was assuming he and his friends could get away, and assuming Leo's doomsday candles didn't go off by accident. Leo's inventions sometimes did that. In which case, the weather would get much hotter,
with a 90% chance of fiery apocalypse.
"Be careful down there," he told Piper and Annabeth.
Piper crept around the left side of the ridge. Annabeth went right. Jason pulled himself up with his walking stick and hobbled toward the ruins. He flashed back to the last time he'd plunged into a mob of evil spirits, in the House of Hades. If it hadn't been for Frank Zhang and Nico D'Angelo... Gods. Nico. Over the past few days, every time Jason sacrificed a portion of a meal to Jupiter, he prayed to his dad to help Nico. That kid had gone through so much, and yet he had volunteered for the most difficult job, transporting the Athena Parthenos statue to Camp Half-Blood. If he didn't succeed, the Roman and Greek demigods would slaughter each other. Then, no matter what happened in Greece, the Argo II would have no home to return to. Jason passed through the palace's ghostly gateway. He realized just in time that a section of mosaic floor in front of him was an illusion, covering a 10-foot-deep excavation pit. He sidestepped it and continued into the courtyard. The two levels of reality reminded him of the Titan stronghold on Mount Othrys, a disorienting maze of black marble walls that randomly melted into shadow and solidified again. At least during that fight, Jason had 100 legionnaires at his side. Now all he had was an old man's body, a stick, and two friends in slinky dresses. 40 feet ahead of him, Piper moved through the crowd, smiling and filling wine glasses for the ghostly revelers. If she was afraid, she didn't show it. So far, the ghosts weren't paying her any special attention. Hazel's magic must have been working. Over on the right, Annabeth collected empty plates and goblets. She wasn't smiling. Jason remembered the talk he'd had with Percy before leaving the ship. Percy had stayed aboard to watch for threats from the sea, but he hadn't liked the idea of Annabeth going on this expedition without him, especially since it would be the first time they were apart since returning from Tartarus. He'd pulled Jason aside.
"Hey, man, Annabeth would kill me if I suggested she needed anybody to protect her."
Jason laughed.
"Yeah, she would. But look out for her, okay?"
Jason squeezed his friend's shoulder.
"I'll make sure she gets back to you safely."
Now Jason wondered if he could keep that promise. He reached the edge of the crowd. A raspy voice cried,
"Iros!"
Antinous, the ghoul with the arrow in his throat, was staring right at him.
"Is that you, you old beggar?"
Hazel's magic did its work. Cold air rippled across Jason's face as the mist subtly altered his appearance, showing the suitors what they expected to see.
"That's me," Jason said. "Iros."
A dozen more ghosts turned toward him. Some scowled and gripped the hilts of their glowing purple swords. Too late. Jason wondered if Iros was an enemy of theirs, but he'd already committed to the part. He hobbled forward, putting on his best cranky old man expression.
"Guess I'm late to the party. I hope you saved me some food."
One of the ghosts sneered in disgust.
"Ungrateful old panhandler. Should I kill him, Antinous?"
Jason's neck muscles tightened. Antinous regarded him for a three count, then chuckled.
"I'm in a good mood today. Come, Iros, join me at my table."
Jason didn't have much choice. He sat across from Antinous while more ghosts crowded around, leering as if they expected to see a particularly vicious arm wrestling contest. Up close, Antinous's eyes were solid yellow. His lips stretched paper thin over wolfish teeth. At first, Jason thought the ghoul's curly dark hair was disintegrating,
Then he realized a steady stream of dirt was trickling from Antinous's scalp, spilling over his shoulders. Clods of mud filled the old sword gashes in the ghoul's gray skin. More dirt spilled from the base of the arrow wound in his throat. The power of Gia, Jason thought. The earth is holding this guy together. Antinous slid a golden goblet and a platter of food across the table.
I didn't expect to see you here, Iros. But I suppose even a beggar can sue for retribution. Drink. Eat.
Thick red liquid sloshed in the goblet. On the plate sat a steaming brown lump of mystery meat. Jason's stomach rebelled. Even if ghoul food didn't kill him, his vegetarian girlfriend probably wouldn't kiss him for a month. He recalled what notice the south wind had told him. A wind that blows aimlessly is no good to anyone. Jason's entire career at Camp Jupiter had been built on careful choices. He mediated between demigods, listened to all sides of an argument, found compromises. Even when he chafed against Roman traditions, he thought before he acted. He wasn't impulsive. Notice had warned him that such hesitation would kill him. Jason had to stop deliberating and take what he wanted. If he was an ungrateful beggar, he had to act like one. He ripped off a chunk of meat with his fingers and stuffed it in his mouth. He guzzled some red liquid, which thankfully tasted like watered-down wine, not blood or poison. Jason fought the urge to gag, but he didn't keel over or explode.
Yum!
He wiped his mouth.
Now, tell me about this... What did you call it? Retribution? Where do I sign up?
The ghosts laughed. One pushed his shoulder, and Jason was alarmed that he could actually feel it. At Camp Jupiter, Larry's had no physical substance. Apparently, these spirits did, which meant more enemies who could beat, stab, or decapitate him. Antinous leaned forward.
Tell me, Iros, what do you have to offer? We don't need you to run messages for us like in the old days. Certainly you aren't a fighter. As I recall, Odysseus crushed your jaw and tossed you into the pigsty.
Jason's neurons fired. Iros, the old man who'd run messages for the suitors in exchange for scraps of food. Iros had been sort of like their pet homeless person. When Odysseus came home, disguised as a beggar, Iros thought the new guy was moving in on his territory. The two had started arguing.
You made Iros... Jason hesitated. You made me fight Odysseus. You bet money on it. Even when Odysseus took off his shirt and you saw how muscular he was... You still made me fight him. You didn't care if I lived or died.
Antinous bared his pointed teeth.
Of course I didn't care. I still don't. But you're here. So Gia must have had a reason to allow you back into the mortal world. Tell me, why are you worthy of a share in our spoils?
What spoils? Antinous spread his hands.
The entire world, my friend. The first time we met here, we were only after Odysseus's land, his money, and his wife.
Especially his wife.
A bald ghost in ragged clothes elbowed Jason in the ribs.
That Penelope was a hot little honey cake.
Jason caught a glimpse of Piper serving drinks at the next table. She discreetly put her finger to her mouth in a gag me gesture, then went back to flirting with dead guys. Antinous sneered.
Eurymachus, you whining coward! You never stood a chance with Penelope. I remember you blubbering and pleading for your life with Odysseus, blaming everything on me.
Lot of good it did me.
Eurymachus lifted his tattered shirt, revealing an inch-wide spectral hole in the middle of his chest.
Odysseus shot me in the heart, just because I wanted to marry his wife.
At any rate, Antinous turned to Jason, we have gathered now for a much bigger prize. Once Gia destroys the gods, we will divide up the remnants of the mortal world. Dibs on London, yelled a Gould at the next table. Montreal, shouted another. Duluth, yelled a third, which momentarily stopped the conversation as the other ghosts gave him confused looks. The meat and wine turned to lead in Jason's stomach.
What about the rest of these guests? I count at least 200. Half of them are new to me.
Antinous's yellow eyes gleamed.
All of them are suitors for Gia's favor. All have claims and grievances against the gods or their pet heroes. That scoundrel over there is Hippias, former tyrant of Athens. He got deposed and sided with the Persians to attack his own countrymen. No morals whatsoever. He'd do anything for power.
Thank you, called Hippias.
That rogue with the turkey leg in his mouth, Antinous continued. That's Hasdrubal of Carthage. He has a grudge to settle with Rome.
Mm-hmm,
said the Carthaginian.
And Michael Varus.
Jason choked.
Who?
Over by the sand fountain, the dark-haired guy in the purple shirt and legionnaire armor turned to face them. His outline was blurred, smoky, and indistinct, so Jason guessed he was some form of spirit, but the legionnaire tattoo on his forearm was clear enough. S.P.Q.R., the double-faced head of the god Janus, and 6 score marks for years of service. On his breastplate hung the badge of praetorship and the emblem of the 5th cohort. Jason had never met Michael Varus. The infamous praetor had died in the 1980s. Still, Jason's skin crawled when he met Varus's gaze. Those sunken eyes seemed to bore right through Jason's disguise. Antinous waved dismissively.
He's a Roman demigod. Lost his legion's eagle in Alaska, was it? Doesn't matter. Gia lets him hang around. He insists he has some insight into defeating Camp Jupiter. But you, Iros, you still haven't answered my question. Why should you be welcome among us?
Varus's dead eyes had unnerved Jason. He could feel the mist thinning around him, reacting to his uncertainty. Suddenly, Annabeth appeared on Antinous's shoulder.
More wine, my lord? Oops.
She spilled the contents of a silver pitcher down the back of Antinous's neck.
Gah!
The ghoul arched his spine.
Foolish girl! Who let you back from Tartarus?
A titan, my lord.
Annabeth dipped her head apologetically.
May I bring you some moist towelettes? Your arrow is dripping.
Begone!
Annabeth caught Jason's eye, a silent message of support. Then she disappeared in the crowd. The ghoul wiped himself off, giving Jason a chance to collect his thoughts. He was Iros, former messenger of the suitors. Why would he be here? Why should they accept him? He picked up the nearest steak knife and stabbed it into the table, making the ghosts around him jump.
Why should you welcome me? Jason growled. Because I'm still running messages, you stupid wretches. I've just come from the House of Hades to see what you're up to.
That last part was true, and it seemed to give Antinous pause. The ghoul glared at him, wine still dripping from the arrow shaft in his throat.
You expect me to believe Gia sent you, a beggar, to check up on us?
Jason laughed.
I was among the last to leave Epirus before the doors of death were closed. I saw the chamber where Clytius stood guard under a domed ceiling tiled with tombstones. I walked the jewel and bone floors of the Necromantion.
That was also true. Around the table, ghosts shifted and muttered.
So, Antinous.
Jason jabbed a finger at the ghoul. Maybe you should explain to me why you're worthy of Gia's favor.
All I see is a crowd of lazy, dawdling dead folk enjoying themselves and not helping the war effort. What should I tell the Earth Mother?
From the corner of his eye, Jason saw Piper flash him an approving smile. Then she returned her attention to a glowing purple Greek dude who was trying to make her sit on his lap. Antinous wrapped his hand around the steak knife Jason had impaled in the table. He pulled it free and studied the blade.
If you come from Gia, you must know we are here under orders. Porphyrion decreed it.
Antinous ran the knife blade across his palm. Instead of blood, dried dirt spilled from the cut.
You do know Porphyrion?
Jason struggled to keep his nausea under control. He remembered Porphyrion just fine from their battle at the Wolf House.
The giant king, green skin, 40 feet tall, white eyes, hair braided with weapons? Of course I know him. He's a lot more impressive than you.
He decided not to mention that the last time he'd seen the giant king, Jason had blasted him in the head with lightning. For once, Antinous looked speechless, but his bald ghost friend, Eurymachus, put an arm around Jason's shoulders.
Now, friend!
Eurymachus smelled like sour wine and burning electrical wires. His ghostly touch made Jason's ribcage tingle.
I'm sure we didn't mean to question your credentials. It's just, well, if you've spoken with Porphyrion in Athens, you know why we're here. I assure you, we're doing exactly as he ordered.
Jason tried to mask his surprise.
Porphyrion in Athens?
Gia had promised to pull up the gods by their roots. Chiron, Jason's mentor at Camp Half-Blood, had assumed that meant that the giants would try to rouse the Earth Goddess at the original Mount Olympus. But now...
The Acropolis,
Jason said.
The most ancient temples to the gods, in the middle of Athens. That's where Gia will wake.
Of course!
Eurymachus laughed. The wound in his chest made a popping sound, like a porpoise's blowhole.
And to get there, those meddlesome demigods will have to travel by sea, eh? They know it's too dangerous to fly over land.
Which means they'll have to pass this island, Jason said.
Eurymachus nodded eagerly. He removed his arm from Jason's shoulders and dipped his finger in his wine glass.
At that point, they'll have to make a choice, eh?
On the tabletop, he traced a coastline, red wine glowing unnaturally against the wood. He drew Greece like a misshapen hourglass, a large, dangly blob for the northern mainland. Then another blob below it, almost as large, the big chunk of land known as the Peloponnese. Cutting between them was a narrow line of sea, the Straits of Corinth. Jason hardly needed a picture. He and the rest of the crew had spent the last day at sea studying maps.
The most direct route, Eurymachus said, would be due east from here, across the Straits of Corinth. But if they try to go that way...
Enough! Antinous snapped. You have a loose tongue, Eurymachus!
The ghost looked offended.
I wasn't going to tell him everything. Just about the Cyclopes' armies massed on either shore, and the raging storm spirits in the air, and those vicious sea monsters Keto sent to infest the waters. And, of course, if the ship got as far as Delphi...
Idiot!
Antinous lunged across the table and grabbed the ghost's wrists. A thin crust of dirt spread from the ghoul's hand, straight up Eurymachus's spectral arm.
No!
Eurymachus yelped.
Please, I only meant...
The ghost screamed as the dirt covered his body like a shell, then cracked apart, leaving nothing but a pile of dust. Eurymachus was gone. Antinous sat back and brushed off his hands. The other suitors at the table watched him in wary silence.
Apologies, Iros. The ghoul smiled coldly. All you need to know. The ways to Athens are well guarded, just as we promised. The demigods would either have to risk the straits, which are impossible, or sail around the entire Peloponnese, which is hardly much safer. In any event, it's unlikely they will survive long enough to make that choice. Once they reach Ithaca, we will know. We will stop them here, and Gia will see how valuable we are. You can take that message back to Athens.
Jason's heart hammered against his sternum. He'd never seen anything like the shell of earth that Antinous had summoned to destroy Eurymachus. He didn't want to find out if that power worked on demigods. Also, Antinous sounded confident that he could detect the Argo II. Hazel's magic seemed to be obscuring the ship so far, but there was no telling how long that would last. Jason had the intel they'd come for. Their goal was Athens. The safer route, or at least the not-impossible route, was around the southern coast. Today was July 20th. They only had 12 days before Gia planned to wake, on August 1st, the ancient feast of hope. Jason and his friends needed to leave while they had the chance. But something else bothered him. A cold sense of foreboding, as if he hadn't heard the worst news yet. Eurymachus had mentioned Delphi. Jason had secretly hoped to visit the ancient site of Apollo's oracle, maybe get some insight into his personal future. But if the place had been overrun by monsters... He pushed aside his plate of cold food.
Sounds like everything is under control. For your sake, Antinous, I hope so. These demigods are resourceful. They closed the doors of death. We wouldn't want them sneaking past you, perhaps getting help from Delphi.
Antinous chuckled.
No risk of that. Delphi is no longer in Apollo's control. I see.
And if the demigods sail the long way around the Peloponnese?
You worry too much. That journey is never safe for demigods. And it's much too far. Besides, victory runs rampant in Olympia. As long as that's the case, there is no way the demigods can win this war.
Jason didn't understand what that meant either, but he nodded.
Very well. I will report as much to King Porphyrion. Thank you for the... meal.
Over at the fountain, Michael Varus called,
Wait!
Jason bit back a curse. He'd been trying to ignore the dead praetor, but now Varus walked over, surrounded in a hazy white aura, his deep-set eyes like sinkholes. At his side hung an imperial gold gladius.
You must stay, Varus said.
Antinous shot the ghost an irritated look.
What's the problem, Legionnaire? If Iros wants to leave, let him. He smells bad.
The other ghosts laughed nervously. Across the courtyard, Piper shot Jason a worried glance. A little farther away, Annabeth casually palmed a carving knife from the nearest platter of meat. Varys rested his hand on the pommel of his sword. Despite the heat, his breastplate was glazed with ice.
I lost my cohort twice in Alaska. Once in life, once in death to a Grecus named Percy Jackson. Still, I have come here to answer Gia's call. Do you know why?
Jason swallowed.
Stubbornness?
This is a place of longing, Varys said. All of us are drawn here, sustained not only by Gia's power, but also by our strongest desires. Eurymachus's greed, Antinous's cruelty.
You flatter me,
the ghoul muttered.
Hasdrubal's hatred, Varys continued. Hippias's bitterness, my ambition. And you, Iros. What has drawn you here? What does a beggar most desire? Perhaps a home?
An uncomfortable tingle started at the base of Jason's skull, the same feeling he got when a huge electrical storm was about to break.
I should be going, he said. Messages to carry.
Michael Varys drew his sword.
My father is Janus, the god of two faces. I am used to seeing through masks and deceptions. Do you know, Iros, why we are so sure the demigods will not pass our island undetected?
Jason silently ran through his repertoire of Latin cuss words. He tried to calculate how long it would take him to get out his emergency flare and fire it. Hopefully he could buy enough time for the girls to find shelter before this mob of dead guys slaughtered him. He turned to Antinous.
Look, are you in charge here or not? Maybe you should muzzle your Roman.
The ghoul took a deep breath. The arrow rattled in his throat.
Ah, but this might be entertaining. Go on, Varys.
The dead praetor raised his sword.
Our desires reveal us. They show us for who we really are. Someone has come for you, Jason Grace.
Behind Varys, the crowd parted. The shimmering ghost of a woman drifted forward, and Jason felt as if his bones were turning to dust.
My dearest, said his mother's ghost, you have come home.
Chapter 3. Jason. Somehow he knew her. He recognized her dress, a flowery green and red wraparound, like the skirt of a Christmas tree. He recognized the colorful plastic bangles on her wrists that had dug into his back when she hugged him goodbye at the wolf house. He recognized her hair, an over-teased corona of dyed blonde curls, and her scent of lemons and aerosol. Her eyes were blue like Jason's, but they gleamed with fractured light, like she'd just come out of a bunker after a nuclear war, hungrily searching for familiar details in a changed world.
Dearest!
She held out her arms. Jason's vision tunneled. The ghosts and ghouls no longer mattered. His mist disguise burned off. His posture straightened. His joints stopped aching. His walking stick turned back into an imperial gold gladius. The burning sensation didn't stop. He felt as if layers of his life were being seared away. His months at Camp Half-Blood, his years at Camp Jupiter, his training with Lupa, the wolf goddess. He was a scared and vulnerable 2-year-old again. Even the scar on his lip, from when he tried to eat a stapler as a toddler, stung like a fresh wound.
Mom?
He managed.
Yes, dearest.
Her image flickered.
Come, embrace me.
You're not real.
Of course she is real.
Michael Varys's voice sounded far away.
Did you think Gia would let such an important spirit languish in the underworld? She is your mother, Beryl Grace, star of television, sweetheart to the King of Olympus, who rejected her not once but twice, in both his Greek and Roman aspects. She deserves justice as much as any of us. Jason's heart felt wobbly. The suitors crowded around him, watching. I'm their entertainment, Jason realized. The ghosts probably found this even more amusing than two beggars fighting to the death. Piper's voice cut through the buzzing in his head. Jason, look at me! She stood 20 feet away, holding her ceramic amphora. Her smile was gone. Her gaze was fierce and commanding, as impossible to ignore as the blue harpy feather in her hair. That isn't your mother. Her voice is working some kind of magic on you, like charm speak, but more dangerous. Can't you sense it? She's right. Annabeth climbed onto the nearest table. She kicked aside a platter, startling a dozen suitors. Jason, that's only a remnant of your mother, like an aura, maybe, or...
A remnant?
His mother's ghost sobbed.
Yes. Look what I have been reduced to. It's Jupiter's fault. He abandoned us. He wouldn't help me. I didn't want to leave you in Sonoma, my dear, but Juno and Jupiter gave me no choice. They wouldn't allow us to stay together. Why fight for them now? Join these suitors. Lead them. We can be a family again.
Jason felt hundreds of eyes on him. This has been the story of my life, he thought bitterly. Everyone had always watched him, expecting him to lead the way. From the moment he'd arrived at Camp Jupiter, the Roman demigods had treated him like a prince in waiting. Despite his attempts to alter his destiny, joining the worst cohort, trying to change the camp traditions, taking the least glamorous missions, and befriending the least popular kids, he had been made praetor anyway. As a son of Jupiter, his future had been assured. He remembered what Hercules had said to him at the Straits of Gibraltar. It's not easy being a son of Zeus. Too much pressure. Eventually, it can make a guy snap. Now Jason was here, drawn as taut as a bowstring.
You left me, he told his mother. That wasn't Jupiter or Juno. That was you.
Beryl Grace stepped forward. The worry lines around her eyes, the pained tightness in her mouth, reminded Jason of his sister, Thalia.
Dearest, I told you I would come back. Those were my last words to you. Don't you remember?
Jason shivered. In the ruins of the wolf house, his mother had hugged him one last time. She had smiled, but her eyes were full of tears.
It's all right, she had promised.
But even as a little kid, Jason had known it wasn't all right.
Wait here. I will be back for you, dearest. I will see you soon.
She hadn't come back. Instead, Jason had wandered the ruins, crying and alone, calling for his mother and for Thalia, until the wolves came for him. His mother's unkept promise was at the core of who he was. He'd built his whole life around the irritation of her words, like the grain of sand at the center of a pearl. People lie. Promises are broken. That was why, as much as it chafed him, Jason followed rules. He kept his promises. He never wanted to abandon anyone the way he'd been abandoned and lied to. Now his mom was back, erasing the one certainty Jason had about her, that she'd left him forever. Across the table, Antinous raised his goblet.
So pleased to meet you, son of Jupiter. Listen to your mother. You have many grievances against the gods. Why not join us? I gather these two serving girls are your friends. We will spare them. You wish to have your mother remain in the world? We can do that. You wish to be a king?
No. Jason's mind was spinning. No, I don't belong with you. Michael Varys regarded him with cold eyes.
Are you so sure, my fellow praetor? Even if you defeat the giants and Gia, would you return home like Odysseus did? Where is your home now? With the Greeks? With the Romans? No one will accept you. And if you get back, who's to say you won't find ruins like this?
Jason scanned the palace courtyard. Without the illusory balconies and colonnades, there was nothing but a heap of rubble on a barren hilltop. Only the fountain seemed real, spewing forth sand like a reminder of Gia's limitless power.
You were a legion officer, he told Varys, a leader of Rome.
So were you, Varys said. Loyalties change.
You think I belong with this crowd? Jason asked. A bunch of dead losers waiting for a free handout from Gia, whining that the world owes them something?
Around the courtyard, ghosts and ghouls rose to their feet and drew weapons.
Beware! Piper yelled at the crowd. Every man in this palace is your enemy. Each one will stab you in the back at the first chance.
Over the last few weeks, Piper's charm speak had become truly powerful. She spoke the truth, and the crowd believed her. They looked sideways at one another, hands clenching the hilts of their swords. Jason's mother stepped toward him.
Dearest, be sensible. Give up your quest. Your Argo II could never make the trip to Athens. Even if it did, there's the matter of the Athena Parthenos.
A tremor passed through him.
What do you mean?
Don't feign ignorance, my dearest. Gia knows about your friend Rhaena, and Nico the son of Hades, and the satyr Hedge. To kill them, the Earth Mother has sent her most dangerous son, the hunter who never rests. But you don't have to die.
The ghouls and ghosts closed in, 200 of them facing Jason in anticipation, as if he might lead them in the national anthem.
The hunter who never rests.
Jason didn't know what that was, but he had to warn Rhaena and Nico, which meant he had to get out of here alive. He looked at Annabeth and Piper. Both stood ready, waiting for his cue. He forced himself to meet his mother's eyes. She looked like the same woman who'd abandoned him in the Sonoma woods 14 years ago. But Jason wasn't a toddler anymore. He was a battle veteran, a demigod who'd faced death countless times. And what he saw in front of him wasn't his mother. At least, not what his mother should be. Caring, loving, selflessly protective. A remnant, Annabeth had called her. Michael Varys had told him that the spirits here were sustained by their strongest desires. The spirit of Beryl Grace literally glowed with need. Her eyes demanded Jason's attention. Her arms reached out, desperate to possess him.
"What do you want?" he asked. "What brought you here?"
"I want life," she cried. "Youth, beauty. Your father could have made me immortal. He could have taken me to Olympus. But he abandoned me. You can set things right, Jason. You are my proud warrior."
Her lemony scent turned acrid, as if she were starting to burn. Jason remembered something Thalia had told him. Their mother had become increasingly unstable until her despair drove her crazy. She had died in a car accident, the result of her driving while drunk. The watered wine in Jason's stomach churned. He decided that if he lived through this day, he would never drink alcohol again.
"You're a mania,"
Jason decided, the word coming to him from his studies at Camp Jupiter long ago.
"A spirit of insanity. That's what you've been reduced to."
"I am all that remains," Beryl Grace agreed.
Her image flickered through a spectrum of colors.
"Embrace me, son. I am all you have left."
The memory of the South